Okay, so we have now, with a whole bunch of new signups, we have a full support call roster. We have lots of people signed up now, but at this time, it's 3 minutes past the hour. There's only two of us on the call, so Sharina is going to have a private session, which actually kind of worked out because of the four questions that were submitted, two of them were submitted by Sharina. So this will be nice for the two of us because we can spend some time luxuriating in your questions. Welcome. Yep, welcome everybody who's listening after the fact. Maybe you've had a long weekend and a holiday weekend, and maybe that's why we have such low attendance on this call. Again, forgive me for last week, especially forgive me for not sending the follow-up email properly because it explained a few things, and I just caught it yesterday. So, welcome. Who's here?
Alina, hi.
Hi, Alina. How are you?
Good, thank you.
We're going to get started. We have four questions to answer tonight. Two of them are from Sharina. Sharina, you ready?
Okay.
Okay. So I started looking into this last week, and I don't think anybody could hear me, though, but you asked, which comes first, the chicken or the egg? Does fear drive the anxiety, which drives the controller? And you wrote, yep, trying to understand the root of the issue. So just real quick, tell me what you mean by the issue. Like the issue with too much fear, too much anxiety. Like what, when you say the issue, do you mean?
Hey, hang on a second. I'm having a hard time all of a sudden hearing you. You were super clear and then you weren't.
It started to break up.
Yeah. Did you get that also, Helena?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I think it's... I hit record and something happened. Let me turn the record off.
Now it's better.
Now it's better? Now can you
say something?
Me?
Say something more.
Well,
hello? Testing one,
a little bit now. Yes.
No, it's still broken up.
Move on, Mike. It was working fine, then I hit record call, and then now all of a sudden you can't hear me. It's just absolutely horrible. Let me turn off the recording real quick. Or can you talk, Sharina?
I can talk.
See, now we can hear you fine.
Correct. I can hear you well now. It sounds a little echoey, but it's not broken up. I can deal with echoey. I can't deal with broken up.
Okay. Yeah, that was weird. All right. So it seems like the problem is solved. And the reason why it's probably echoey is all buildings in Mexico are cement. So should I go outside, Kirk?
No, you're fine. It's not echoey to the point where you can't. Yeah, it's not echoey that you can't understand. But
okay. All right, let's get started then again. So back to your question, trying to understand the root of the issue. What do you mean by the issue? What do you see as the issue that you're talking about? With fear and anxiety and the controller.
Right. So I see that as the issue. I see not necessarily fear is the issue, but I see anxiety and the controller as the, what's the word I'm looking for? The results of fear, I guess, for lack of a better term. And
right, like, okay.
Right.
Anything else?
And I can talk myself through looking at fear and dealing with it. Like, I can deal with that for the most part. There's a couple of situations where I struggle. But it's trying to calm the conversation of anxiety, I guess, is the best way of putting it. When you get into that flight or freeze mode, and you're like physically, your body is reacting. Like the heart rate increases, your breath rate becomes shallow and quicker. Like understanding that you're going into, like I logically know, I'm like, okay, this is going into diffused physiological arousal. I need to calm down. But in the same moment, it's trying to figure out how to do that and how to had the fear not trigger anxiety, which then triggers the controller. At least
okay.
How I see it.
Yeah. Okay. And it's cyclical, right? Round and round it goes.
Right.
And just there's a couple things that I want to make clear. Like, we seek the certainty of intellectual knowledge. Like, you want to have some answers, something that you can be certain about. You want to know what the problem is so that you can fix the problem. And I respect that. So what happens, what anxiety is fear. Fear is anxiety. Anxiety is fear. They're exactly the same thing. Specifically, anxiety is recirculating fear, round and round, stuck in your system, which then kind of makes you want to try and control it. You want to take the 3 deep breaths. You want to do positive affirmations. You want to calm the F down, right?
Right.
And then it just becomes really, really cyclical. So by seeking the certainty of intellectual knowledge, though, we were a little limited. But let me give you something that you can hang your hat on. Let me give you something that you can be certain about. And I go into great depth of this in the book. I don't know if you read my book, The Art of Fear, but
yes,
the lizard brain, yeah, the lizard brain, if you remember, drives it all. And there's a big difference between the mind versus the brain versus the lizard brain. In the book, I talked about the brain not being an it, but rather a we. Like, there's a lot of components to the brain. And the lizard brain, I talked about as being the CEO. It's a big deal, basically. And so there's the lizard brain, perceived threat. Like, all data, all input is first run through this primary filter. And it's the manufacturing plant for fear. And if there's a perceived threat, it'll send a shot of fear, a sensation of discomfort in your body, compelling you to fight or flight. But to the lizard brain, everything is a perceived threat. And as a result, fear is with us every moment of every day in nearly every interaction we have. So lizard brain, you know, is the start of the issue, right? We like to think that we've evolved past being lizard brain creatures. We haven't, right? So then we have fear in our body. And then we start thinking about the fear, which leads to attempts to control it. Emotional intelligence is seen as our ability to control our fear. And when we try to control fear, the best we can do is just kind of lock it down in the basement. And then it gets stuck down there, and then it shows up as anxiety. And then it becomes cyclical. Round and round we go. But always it comes back to the lizard brain. But the lizard brain is not the root of the issue, because the lizard brain isn't an issue. It's only here to help us. The issue is, unfortunately, our attempts to understand these emotions, and which brings us back to your question. It's like you're trying to understand the root of the issue, and I hate to say it, but us trying to understand our emotions and trying to understand the root of the issue keeps us in our heads rather than our bodies. It's like we're so stuck in our heads trying to figure this out that we never get a chance to feel anything. And especially with people that are really intellectual, really intelligent, so this is your compliment for the question, you know, we think that if we put our brains on the job, then we'll be able to figure this out, and thus we'll be able to control or change the problem. So it's kind of like even this question is we're trying to grasp the ungraspable. And our minds have been doing this for millions of years now. Like, we're just constantly trying to grasp the ungraspable, and it's driving us all crazy. Like, our minds are being driven crazy trying to figure our emotions out. And whatever we can't figure out, we fill in the gaps with beliefs and stories. And so all that we can really do to answer this question is to come up with beliefs or stories or grasping at the ungraspable. And then the other thing is just also trying to not only understand the emotional problem, but understand the mind in general is also going to drive you crazy. You know, just trying to, the mind will become crazy trying to figure its own self out. Does that make sense? Like, I could ask to speak to the voice of your mind, and I'll ask the question, imagine if we did this in voice dialogue, you know, try to understand yourself. We're going to be there for millions of lifetimes, just going round and round in circles, driving ourselves crazy. So the mind is not just ungraspable, and I was saying this last week, it's also unreasonable. Now, there are moments where you can reason with the mind and something makes sense, or you can steer it or control it. But have you ever met a person that is willing or able to be controlled? Or I prefaced this last week, too. Have you ever met a reasonable person or a person who makes sense all the time? And so trying to control the mind, trying to reason with the mind, trying to have the mind make sense of itself and make sense of emotions, we're basically driving ourselves crazy just asking these kinds of questions.
Hang on, you're breaking up again. I don't know what you are a little bit.
Okay, so breaking up again. How much did you lose for that?
Just the last sentence. It's worse. Try talking now.
Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, and feel free to interrupt me anytime it starts to get jumbled again. Yeah.
I don't want to miss anything. I will interrupt.
So, okay. Let me see if I get this correctly, please.
Yes.
So what my question is anxiety is the response to fear, and trying to understand what triggers my fear, right, ahead of time, looking at it from what I would consider a rational point of view, so that you don't go into this emotionally flooding situation or anxiety is, you know, taking over, right? So how does that tie in?
Okay. The original root problem is life itself, the scary experience. Fear is with us every moment of every single day in nearly every interaction we have. And it's that way for everyone. And so,
but I think, isn't there some people that are more responsive to it than others?
There are some people that are more resistant to it and that it persists. So, like, if you look at somebody and they seem fearless, they're not fearless. They're either really good at repressing fear and it's messing up their lives in other ways, or they have a really intimate, considerate relationship with fear. Whereas you look at somebody who's pickled in fear, usually that means that they're either repressing it or resisting it as well. What I'm saying is the resistance to fear can either show up as somebody appearing fearless, or the resistance to fear can show up as somebody being pickled in fear.
Got it.
It's just, but the person that appears fearless, there's some other part of their lives that's being compromised. Maybe they're really angry or they're depressed. So what I'm saying is that it's kind of how you deal with fear that makes all the difference. And anxiety is actually not the response to fear. Anxiety is if you respond to your fear in a repressive way, it'll show up as reoccurring, recirculating anxiety.
So, can you say more about that?
Yeah. So, you know, we could do a whole bunch of voice dialogue on this. Like, we could speak to the voice of the lizard brain. We could speak to the voice of fear. We could speak to the voice of control or the voice of anxiety. I could ask fear and anxiety, what's the difference between you two? And I've done this before. And anxiety would say, well, I am fear. I'm recirculating fear. Hmm. So anxiety is not the response to fear. Anxiety is fear. Specifically, it's undealt with fear that's trapped in your body that's circulating round and round and round.
Okay.
Now, but let's look at the reason why you asked this question in the first place. I believe that you're asking this question because you want to understand the root of your anxiety. You know, where is it coming from?
Right.
The root of your anxiety is that life is a scary experience, and if you don't deal with the fear in an honest way, it'll reoccur round and round in your body as anxiety. So the root of the problem is your resistance to the fear. Do you follow?
Okay. I'm following.
Okay.
Hailing a little behind, but I'm still following.
Okay. So when it comes to emotions, because I know you asked this question because you want to solve the problem that is anxiety. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Trying to understand the problem is very noble, but once you try to understand more than just, oh, my resistance is causing the anxiety, whatever you resist persists, right? Anything past that will become part of the problem. Because trying to understand your emotions is another way to resist them. Trying to understand your emotions is a way to continue to not feel them. You follow that?
I do. I don't know if I 100% understand it fully, but I'm following the concept.
Okay. There's a great quote by Albert Einstein. No problem can be solved by using the same consciousness that created it. You must learn to see the world anew. What I'm saying is if you have an anxiety problem and you're asking questions like that, the question is the problem. By trying to understand your emotions, it's another way to continue to not feel them. So I have a client who, very emotionally repressed, panic attacks, having a lot of, I mean, he was to the point where he was worried he had schizophrenia. He didn't. He was just so emotionally repressed that it was starting to show up in panic and social anxiety. And so he started going to a men's group. And at the men's group, they talked a lot about their emotions, and he immediately felt better. But talking and thinking about your emotions and talking and thinking about your anxiety is definitely a step in the right direction. But if you really want to deal with your emotions by using a different form of consciousness, then what you need to do is deal with the emotions emotionally. You need to learn how to feel them. So instead of asking questions, what I'm suggesting is that instead of trying to understand something, only understand that your resistance to the fear is what is causing your anxiety. Stop there. And then let's just spend some time helping you feel your fear. And to do that, you have to get into your body.
Okay.
Okay.
Got it.
Let's do a voice. You ready?
Okay.
Allow me, please. Oh, let's do two voices. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the analytical mind. Who am I speaking to?
The analytical mind.
All right. So it's probably you that asked this question. As the analytical mind, are you the right tool for the job for feeling her emotions?
For feeling the emotions, no.
Right. But you have a role. It's an important role. What is that role?
My role is to understand what is causing the emotions so that that issue can be resolved.
Right. So I'm honoring you. I answered your question. I said that the cause of the issue is that life is just innately a scary experience. All data is run through the amygdala. With a perceived threat, it sends fear to the body. Everything is a perceived threat to that part of the mind. And then when she then resists the emotion, it turns into anxiety that recirculates round and round and round. Is there anything else that you need to understand as the analytical mind?
No, it's pretty simple.
It is. The other thing you can understand is that the solution is for her to step away from you and stop trying to figure out anything else and just kind of put you aside, put you on the shelf for a moment, and then just access this next voice, which is the body. Are you willing to step aside and let her have free, clear, and easy access to something that is in many ways the exact opposite of you or transcends you? Or are you willing to step aside is what I'm asking?
Sure.
Okay. Allow me, please, to speak. Well, before we do this, how big of a role do you play in her life?
Analytical? Mm-hmm. As the analytical mind?
Yeah.
Probably 60%.
Okay. You're a beautiful tool. And when it comes to emotions, you're limited.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever one voice plays such a big role in the corporation, there can often be conflict. Because then she might think that you're the whole corporation or that you're so good at your job that you can solve all problems. And that's why I'm hoping that she can have a different experience besides you. With the deepest of respect, though, we can come back to you anytime. Without further ado, allow me please now to speak to the voice of the body.
Okay.
Who am I speaking to?
The voice of the body.
Okay. Do you have thoughts?
Do I have thoughts? No.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, we need to have some part of the mind involved in this to be able to speak on your behalf. So just know that there's a little sliver there. But as the voice of the body, tell me the role that you play in her life.
As the voice of the body, I am intuitive to different environments and different situations to keep her safe and aware. I am in tune with different people that I'm around, sensing what is going on with them, and then processing and giving that information to the analytical mind. And I am the one that moves her around, like the physical body, moving her to and from.
Okay. And the interesting thing about you is you're not a life support system for the mind. You have your own wisdom. And within you, we have physical intelligence. We have emotional intelligence because the emotions are feelings that kind of flow through you. You're actually the bridge that people cross to get to a spiritual intelligence, because the second they stop being of their minds, get into their bodies, maybe through sports, kind of that takes them into higher states like the zone and flow. So you're a very important voice that often gets overlooked. But it sounds to me like Trina has a pretty close, intimate relationship with you. Is that true?
Yes. She will listen to her body over the analytical mind if something doesn't feel correctly.
All right. So she'll listen to me over the analytical
yes.
mind. All right. So can she listen to the emotions that flow through you, like water? Does she listen to that component of you?
Yes.
And what does listen even mean? Like, look at her when the amygdala, the lizard brain, sends a shot of discomfort called fear, and it flows, it's supposed to flow into, through, and out of you like water. What does she do? How does she react when that emotion comes through?
When fear comes through me as the body, I think she has a tendency to circulate it, kind of like a whirlpool.
So notice what just happened. And I pay really close attention to language. You said, I think. Right?
Yep. I went into the analytical mind instead of staying in my body.
Mm-hmm. And this is actually taught by society. We put the mind, the analytical mind, on the job to try and figure out what to do with these uncomfortable emotions. So she's not alone. So just notice, the noticing is the only thing that's important. And it's not that she tries, it's not like she, how do I put this? She doesn't do that consciously. You know what I mean? You know, it suggests that she then tries to understand them, think about them, control them, like somehow she has her finger on the button of what happens with that emotion. And it all comes down to control. And so then we're starting to decipher what happens with the controller. Let's see, where should we go with this? I'm willing to bet, and tell me if you think this feels right, that when it comes to emotions, she doesn't have the habitual pattern or maybe the skill where she can then organically turn to you to have the experience of the emotions. She turns to the mind to deal with them. Is that what you feel happens?
And probably, I would say probably 70% of the time. Yes, I would say that's accurate. There are other times where she will just feel, and more specifically, when it's with others. So if others are discomforted or upset, she will feel with them.
Oh.
That makes sense.
Right, like if a dog is scared or a friend is crying, like sadness or...
Correct.
Right, or anger. I mean, there's a lot of unpleasant emotions. So she's more willing to be empathetic to other people's emotions, but when you have your own emotional component, she 70% of the time just immediately goes into her head as a coping mechanism. And there's a payoff for that, you know, but there's also a cost.
Right.
So as the voice of her body, what do you recommend that she does with fear and anger and sadness that is autonomous in its own system called Tarina? What do you recommend that she does with these feelings that come through, that flow through you?
I think the word would be to trust me.
Okay.
Instead of thinking through it.
Yeah. And I mentioned before that the mind will drive itself crazy and thus drive her crazy as well, trying to figure it out. And a more simple relationship can be found just by turning towards you and spending a little bit of time with you. Thinking about the emotions is a form of resistance, and the resistance is what causes problems. Last question, as the voice of the body, do you feel like fear is recirculating as anxiety in your system right now?
Right now? No.
But just in general?
In general, I would say probably a low current of it. Like it's always there, like it's part of the alertness of my body.
Mm-hmm. So notice you just said my body, so some other voice is talking. And so you've fallen out of voice. So just the noticing is the most important part. Who's speaking? Who's referring to the body as my body?
The controller.
Right. So notice, too, how often you fall out of voice. And the body is a very advanced voice, but I think that what we're uncovering kind of bit by bit is just the default mode is to go to controller, go to the analytical mind whenever there's an emotional flow through the body. Can you see that?
Mm-hmm. Whenever there's a personal emotional flow.
Right.
I'm perfectly comfortable as the body being emotional with others.
Right.
I don't have an issue with that at all. I'm happy to cry right alongside somebody else's crying. Like,
oh my gosh, will you be my best friend?
I consider that a strength.
Okay.
Nobody ever wants to be alone, and to be able just to sit, either either be just in the presence of them as they're having a hard time or to be right there with them feeling the emotions is, I think, a beautiful gift.
Well, let's take that into your next question, and let's do an exercise together, you and me, plus everyone that's on the call as well.
Okay.
Your second question is, I'm the worst passenger in a car. For sure there's some PTSD.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that fear?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Uh-huh. This is where the I'm already knowing that this is where the controller, like, is already, like, I can feel it, like, coming into this conversation. Uh-huh.
Right. So let me take, and I want everybody to participate, and then I'll give everybody a chance to comment afterwards. But we're going to rapid fire a series of voices to show the distinct difference between all the many ways in which we deal with fear. And I'm going to start with, like, the worst ways to deal with fear and then move on to the best ways. I don't have these written down, so I may jump around a little bit, but you ready? We're just going to spend, like, 10 seconds in each voice, and I just want you to notice, I'm not going to ask any questions, just notice the flavor of each voice and how distinctly different every single one of them is, all these ways in which we deal with fear. You ready?
Okay.
All right, everybody do this. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one who is trying to understand or analyze fear. Who am I speaking to?
The analytical mind.
Mm-hmm. But repeat exactly what I say, because it's the analytical mind with a specific job. So the one who is trying to analyze fear, who am I speaking to?
The one who's trying to analyze fear.
All right, do your thing.
Do my thing?
Yep, just be you. Notice, you don't have to say anything. Just spend 10 seconds of silence, just noticing what it's like to be you doing your thing. The one who's trying to analyze fear. Notice how you feel. And now allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one who's trying to control fear. Who am I speaking to?
The one who's trying to control fear.
Okay. Now you do your thing. And notice how different you are from the last voice. And notice how you feel. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one who's trying to repress or resist fear. Let's go with resist fear. Who am I speaking to?
The one who's trying to resist fear.
Now let's get rid of the word try. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one who's resisting fear. Not trying to, but actually resisting fear. Who am I speaking to?
The one who is resisting fear.
As we're going through these different voices, notice I'm doing that thing like with the ham radio where you move one station, one click at a time. And some voices feel very similar and others are very different, but let's just keep going and just listening and feeling the differences between all of these. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of one who is accepting fear. Who am I speaking to?
The voice who is accepting fear.
Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of, the one who's thinking about feeling fear. Who am I speaking to?
The one who's thinking about feeling fear.
And no, as we're doing this, notice which part of you is in that car, the anxiety. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one who intends to have a more honest relationship with fear? Who am I speaking to?
The one who intends to have a more honest relationship with fear.
See, the intention is good, but there's still no action. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one who has started a fear practice. Who am I speaking to?
The one who's starting a fear practice.
Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one who spends 2 minutes a day feeling their fear. Who am I speaking to?
The one who spends 2 minutes a day feeling fear.
Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one who prioritizes their fear practice. Who am I speaking to?
The one who's prioritizing the fear practice.
Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one who feels their fear on whenever it shows up. Who am I speaking to?
The one who feels the fear in the moment.
Allow me, please, to speak to the one who has an intimate relationship with fear. Who am I speaking to?
The one who has an intimate relationship with fear.
I want to open up the call to anybody that wants to comment on what that was like for you. And Trina will also have you comment. We'll start with you, but when you're done, just anybody else that wants to comment, please do. What was that like for you? What did you get out of that?
The first probably 6 questions, I could feel my heart rate actually increase. My breathing was shallow and quicker. And then the last probably 4 questions, I noticed that it was slower. The first few questions, I noticed my eyes were actually down. And then I ended up closing my eyes and just feeling it. And I noticed that my chin was actually up. So I thought that was really interesting to witness, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else?
Hello?
In the first.
Hello? Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm not sure who else is here.
Go ahead.
Is that Jaquetta? Go ahead.
Yes. Yes. The first, I guess the top three, it's all frustration. And at one point it feels kind of powerful, like you're going to be able to do this. But in the bottom three is where some clarity and intention take root.
Was your voice breaking up really bad, or?
Yeah, but I could.
Can you hear me?
Hear, yeah, now we can hear you better. I could understand what you were saying. The first three, rough. The last three, you know, not rough. Good.
You're really breaking up.
I'm breaking up?
No,
I'm breaking up.
Okay.
So,
my fault. Can you guys hear me now? Hello?
There, I can hear you.
Now, yeah, okay. It's better.
Okay.
I can hear you.
Does somebody else want to share what that was like for you?
I would like to. This is Helena. Hello.
Okay. Hi.
I don't remember the sets of questions, like the first five, but it was interesting to feel how all of them are kind of present, struggling between all of them. Like today I had a moment, how, you know, funny, today precisely I had a moment where I felt a lot of anxiety. And it was short, but I was like thinking of the call today. So when you were asking the questions, I was kind of thinking of that moment. And it's definitely whenever you ask, be the voice or, you know, speak up as the voice who has an intimate relationship with fear or communicates with fear, it feels much better, much like a relief. But the thinking, the struggling, the controlling, definitely it's much heavier because that's the part, like you were saying, where you just don't allow the emotion to be whatever it wants to be and just, you know, take the way. It's like a messenger that comes to tell you something. You don't allow the messenger to speak, so it won't leave.
Right. And, you know, I love these men's groups, you know, that I was talking about with my client. And, you know, they get together and they talk about their fear. They talk about their anxiety. And it's definitely a step in the right direction. But they're still not feeling it. I mean, maybe when they talk about it, it's a way to access it and feel it. But so long as they're in their analytical minds about it and they're not in their bodies, they haven't gone all the way. And so if you notice, I said I was going to do them from worst to best. And the one who's thinking about feeling their fear, you know, was about a third of the way through. So like I said, it's a step in the right direction, but we're still not there. You know, talking and thinking about our emotions is not where we want to go. We want to get into our bodies. Like the solution is found by getting into our bodies. And I feel like for me, I felt like there were subtle differences between all the first few, and then there were also subtle differences between the last few, like feeling fear, being intimate with fear. You know, felt somewhat similar, but the intimate with fear kind of took us all the way.
Yeah.
So any questions or clarifications?
Maybe,
how do you feel?
Yeah, go ahead.
When you're feeling it, I know you say that emotions are supposed to just flow through you.
In a perfect world.
What do you, huh?
In a perfect world, yes.
In a perfect world, yes.
Right.
What do you do or how do you, I guess, what do you do when it starts circulating? How do you pause that recirculating conversation?
Whenever I feel like there's some emotional upheaval in my life, I will spend some time doing the four steps that I've shared with you guys. And sometimes it takes me, you know, up to a week or more before I go, oh, crap. You know, I've been feeling like crap for a week now. I need to do my four steps. And then I do it, and it's like lifts almost immediately. And I feel like an asshole for waiting a week, right? I wrote the damn book about it. So it's, you know, it's an ongoing practice. It never ends, you know. Hopefully it doesn't take 20 years before you start a fear practice, like a lot of people, or even 50 years. You know, hopefully at some point it takes a month. You know, then it takes 3 weeks, then it takes 1 week, and then it takes only a day. You know, at this point, I'm, you know, what a teacher is somebody that's 2 pages further along in the book you're reading. I may be more than 2 pages further along, right? I wrote the book, but it's still something that gets me every time. I'm like, you know, but it gets easier. Like, I had to give a really important speech last week, 2 weeks ago now, I guess, in Bali, and I was speaking about fear and anxiety, and it was so scary. It was a big audience, has the potential to reach millions of viewers, and I really didn't want to mess it up. And I did the four steps that morning before the speech, and if it had been a year ago, I would have had resistance to the fear. But this time, I acknowledged it was normal and natural to feel it. I found the sensation of discomfort in my body. It was about a level 7 or 8. It was nervousness. It was in my chest. I then scanned my body for resistance. There was no resistance there. I'm like, holy shit, I've finally arrived, right? And then I just spent some time feeling my discomfort, and it didn't go away until after the speech was over. But I was really pleased to see that I didn't have any resistance to it. And that's really the key. And the first key is to kind of look into the resistance, and oftentimes trying to understand or ask these questions about fear is a form of resistance. It's probably the biggest form of resistance I see, being in our minds about our emotions, talking and thinking about them and trying to understand them. And then we get into our bodies and we learn how to feel it. That's the second big step. And I just work on it every day. You know, it's a lifetime project. Any other questions?
I do have. You suggest to do the practice every day and not wait to be in a crisis. However, lately I've been like, I'm really happy to be here, but I'm also past a moment where I was feeling a lot of anxiety, and I'm much calmer now. So in general, I'm calm. So how do you practice that when you're just feeling fine about things? Or how do you recommend to make this part of the life, the practice?
I think this practice is great to get you out of a crisis. Like if somebody's depressed, or if they're having anxiety attacks, or have insomnia, then to do this practice every day I think is important. But if you feel like you're in pretty good flow with your life, it's just something that you can come back to again and again, because something else is going to happen to you. Somebody's going to trigger you. You're going to have, you know,
like today.
In the right, right. I did a podcast today, and the podcast host said that he thinks that conflict or traumatic experiences is the biggest problem that we face holding us back. And I said, I don't see that way at all. It's how we deal with the conflict and the trauma that holds us back, which is that we don't deal with it. But if you learn how to deal with it, and you are going to continue coming in contact with all sorts of horrible people, terrible things are going to happen to you, people are going to be mean, you're going to have your heart broken, you're going to get in fights with your spouse, like your kids are going to, you know, do something that just doesn't seem reasonable at all. Like, it's just daily, every day, you're going to come in contact with some sort of conflict. And this is just a tool that you use so that you don't get stuck in that for too long.
Right. And it's a way, if I understand well, to just knowing oneself, right? Trying to, which is not from the control and understand, is just trying to see what's hiding behind that.
Yes.
Right? Trying to discover what's in me, not what's on the others, what others are doing to me, or it's just what's moving inside me so I can, I don't know what to do with that, because I found a reason, for example, today, like the fear of feeling vulnerable. And, okay, found that. That's what triggers me like the most, and what do I do with that vulnerability? It's just like I feel it, let it pass, and then like, okay, I'm safe. But I guess the controller wants to do something about it.
Right. Controller has a long habitual pattern of just trying to conduct this whole orchestra, all these 10,000 voices. It's a lot of pressure on the controller. But let's look at the word vulnerability, for example. Vulnerability is a willingness to be open in the face of fear. You know, like if you are in love with somebody, you know, it's scary to be open. You know, it's like I'm willing to be raw and potentially hurt by this person. I'm willing to open up to, and it's a scary thing to do. It's basically a willingness to feel fear. That's what vulnerability is. And, you know, if you close off, that's one way to not deal with fear. And this is actually a great segue into a question that Glenda kind of and I talked about. Courage, determination, confidence, and success is what she wants to nurture. And if you want to nurture all these things, including, you know, courage is a willingness to feel fear, and let's put vulnerability, so courage, determination, confidence, success, and vulnerability on that list. You know, if these are the things that you want, you have to first look at the things that are the opposite of those. Because let's say you want something. This is my example I give all the time. Let's say you want a car. You know, you desire a car. Usually that means you don't have a car, you know, or you don't like the car that you have. But once you buy the car, then you don't want the car anymore. You want something else. So if you want courage, that means that you don't have courage. That means, you know, I actually looked these words up in the thesaurus, that you feel like a coward, you feel timid. If you want determination, that means that you have idleness. If you want confidence, that means that you have doubt. If you want success, you feel like a failure. You know, if you want to be more vulnerable, you know, what's the opposite of vulnerable? That's the voice that I always ask to speak to. Because until you deal with the opposite of that voice, which is what you're feeling, you know, because otherwise you wouldn't want courage if you didn't feel like you didn't have it, then you're not really being honest with yourself. Like we try to rush through to the positive with positive affirmations. I am a courageous person. I am going to put the Rocky theme music on and I'm going to, you know, I am going to be super determined to do the thing that I've been putting off, you know. I'm going to have the confidence.
What about sublimation?
What's that?
Yeah, what happened with those affirmations? Because I was thinking about the affirmations.
Yes.
What happens there? It's just like I would like you to explain your point of view on that.
Well, what I'm saying that the affirmations seem to work. They give you a moment of like, yes, I can do it. I have confidence, right? But there's a part of you inside that's like, bullshit, right? So you've got to deal with the opposite of these voices first. Like if you want to be courageous, you got to have a fear practice. You got to look at your fear. You got to be spending some time with your fear, have an honest relationship with your fear. If you want to be more confident, you have to have a doubt practice, an uncertainty practice. So I make a living facilitating conversations between people and their doubt, their insecurity, their diffidence, their timidity, their cowardness, their sadness, their failure, their unhappiness. Like, we got to start there. We got to have those conversations first. Because otherwise, it's just going to be lipstick on a pig, you know, or frosting on a cow patty. So, Glenda, do you want to be in the hot seat? Glenda, are you here? Who wants to be in the hot seat for this?
I can be.
Okay, who's this?
Helena.
Helena, okay. What is something that you really want?
That I really want?
Mm-hmm. You want to be more confident, successful.
Yes. Lately, I've been working on being more visible instead of hiding, which is a phase of fear again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, be able to have a voice and don't worry about being perfect with everything. Just do things, you know, speak for the things that I know. So, yeah, it could be blunt, courageous.
Just one thing. Just pick one and we'll go down the rabbit hole of that one. Do you want to be more visible? Do you want to go with that one?
Visible. Yeah.
Okay. So then we first have to deal with the fact that there's a voice called invisible.
Yeah.
That, right? So I make a living helping people get there, but the only way that you can get there, the only way out is through. You know, if you, I don't know that being visible, but give me more. Like, visible why? Why do you want to be visible? Why do you want to be?
It's
visible?
Like not to be afraid of speak up. Like, yeah, like I'm doing all these studies and all these things, but I'm always keeping it safe. I'm keeping myself in a safe place and not out, going out and telling people, hey, this is what I have and this is the good stuff, you know, because I don't want to screw it up. So I don't know. It's just
right.
Fear of failure. Fear of failure. That's the thing.
Okay. So we could do a couple of voices. We could, you know,
yeah.
You want to take more risks, fear of failure. We could do
yeah.
Sense of
the that's
failure.
The thing, risks. That's a key word, risk.
Okay. All right. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one who takes no risks. Who am I speaking to?
The one who takes risks, yeah?
No risks.
Oh, the one
no
who
risks.
Takes no risks.
Right.
All right.
You always want to speak to the opposite voice of what you want, right? So you take no risks. What's it like
yeah.
for you?
Safe.
Mm-hmm. Now there's a payoff
yeah.
in you. You know, there's a wisdom to every voice. There's a payoff with you. You take no risks. You offer her safety. What else?
She doesn't have as many responsibilities.
Right.
And, she's, yeah, she's, besides feeling safe, avoiding, challenges.
Sense of failure, right? Avoiding,
yeah.
that doesn't have to have a challenging life, right? There's,
yeah.
There's less, opportunity for people to criticize her,
right.
put her down, you know, less contact with, I mean, if you're out there being controversial or taking risks, like, you know, people will push back, you know,
yeah.
for their piece of the pie. You know, there's a lot of payoff that come from you.
Right.
And there's a cost. Because I want you to look at Holly, and she wants something more out of her life than what you have to offer. What does she want?
Sure. Holly?
Mm-hmm.
She wants to share her tools, the things that she has learned, and she knows that are good for people. She wants to reach those that were seeking for the information that she was seeking one day and be able to make it available and explain it, the why, where does it come from. So, yeah, people will have the chance to get better with health and inside. It's a good
yeah.
thing.
She wants to share her gifts with the world. She wants to make the world a better place. She wants to bring her this gorgeous messages that she's come up with out into the world.
Yeah.
Like, so there's a payoff and there's a cost of you. Each voice has a great wisdom and a great delusion. And she thinks that if she were to take more risks, then she would have a good chance of doing that. But your job is not to take risks, right? Your job is to take no risks.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
So we need to honor you first and spend some time
right.
with you. And I see that all of these voices have a relationship with fear. Like in many ways, what's going on is you're a way for her to avoid fear. You know, if she takes risks, there's going to be fear. If she steps out of her comfort zone where risk
yeah.
exists, there's going to be fear, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
And she's very anxious, so she doesn't want to get there.
Right. And she doesn't know how to deal with the fear when she gets out there. And it's like, oh my gosh, she's going to, if she shares her gifts with the world, she may never sleep again. She may be just pick with anxiety. And it's like, yeah,
I know she's doing so good.
right. It's like, so can you see that her relationship with fear means everything to her? So, you know, I'm glad that she signed up for this course. Well, I mean, so fear of failure, right? If she puts it out there, she is going to fail more often than she currently is, you know? So better play it safe. You're a comfort place for her. You're a rut, but you're a fur-lined rut. You get that?
Yeah.
Right. So we got to first acknowledge where we are before we can get where we want to go.
Right.
So I'm going to say that again because this is for Glenda. She wants courage. She has to first acknowledge the voice of the coward before she can get to courage. It's like we got to honor and kind of embrace these other voices because oftentimes these other voices, the opposites, are repressed. And, you know, fighting a war against you isn't going to help her be more courageous, right? She needs to acknowledge you and know that you're a safe place to go back to whenever she needs. Determination. You know, you got to first acknowledge the voice of idleness, you know, or no motivation. If you want to get to confidence, you have to first spend some time in doubt or uncertainty. So you see what I'm getting at. We have to have an honest relationship with the, quote, bad side of life or the negative side of life. We have to have an honest relationship with all of these voices because then you can begin to unravel the mystery that is Holly's relationship with fear. She's a fear avoider. Okay?
Right.
All right. Now, as the voice of the one who takes no risks, how do you feel about Holly, her intention to take more risks and be more of a fear embracer versus a fear avoider? Does that feel threatening to you?
I'm concerned, yes, about her anxiety, just that she's doing good now, and sometimes it's been hard for her some other times. So I'm trying to protect her. But I think it's great what she's trying to do.
Okay. So you're supportive. And you're her fur-lined rut to go back into whenever she needs you. So that's a good conversation that you guys are having. This is a good place to pause, ask if anybody has any questions about what I've outlined, and then we're going to go into Holly's question that she submitted, which is the fourth question of the evening afterwards. But allow me, please, to speak to the voice of Holly. Who am I speaking to?
With Holly.
Okay. Do you have any follow-up questions of what we just explored?
No, it is interesting. So now that I'm understanding better, I could do that conversation, making a list of whatever I want to reach and going to the opposite, trying to listen to that voice for a few minutes.
When I decided that I was going to, well, when my teacher decided that I was going to become a teacher, and this is in my book, he said, I want you to learn how to facilitate voice dialogue. I said, absolutely not. It looks way too hard. I doubt.
Yeah, I remember that part.
Yeah, right? And so I went and I just sat and had a doubt practice. Like, I doubt I can do this, you know. I spent a month doing that. And, you know, if you want to take more risks, spend a month just embracing and honoring the voice of the one who doesn't take any risks. Like, really embrace who you are first.
Right. Right.
Does anybody else have any questions about what we've been exploring in question three? So I remember my teacher once facilitated a group of incarcerated teenagers, and they all had severe anger issues. And he could have gone in there and spent a bunch of time just helping them feel calm and peaceful and getting their anger and fear underneath that under control, you know, like you would imagine that they would do in an anger management class. Instead, he sat down, and you know what he asked to speak to? The voice of rage. It was brilliant. You know, he has more guts than I do, that's for sure. Going in and speaking to a bunch of old kids that are in jail, you know, for anger issues and their hostility and crimes against humanity and speaking to the voice of rage. And they had a very reasonable conversation. And from what I understand, I wasn't there. It had a profound effect on these kids' lives. So we gotta first meet ourselves where we are. Rather than trying to gloss over the negative and get to the positive and doing these affirmations, I want to be courageous, I want to have determination and confidence and success.
Right.
We gotta spend some time owning what a coward we are, owning our doubt and uncertainty and owning our failure. You know, spend some time with that and juice it like an orange. So just as a way to transition, Hallie, into your question that you submitted too, you talked about meditation and tapping techniques. And I had mentioned them in my book, and you said you got the impression that I said it does not teach you how to deal with fear. And that's true. And you say that you find that relaxation techniques make the symptoms more... Oh, I wrote, another problem with relaxation techniques is they make the symptoms more tolerable, so who then bothers to address the underlying cause? So I'm glad that you found that in my book. I've been dying for somebody to ask me about that, right?
Okay.
You also said that tapping helps you, you know, makes anxiety or fear dissolve or get better, but you can't tap yourself when you're in the middle of a situation. And then you said that meditation helps you a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And you wanted me to talk a little bit more about my thoughts on meditation and tapping. Did I get that right?
Right, yeah.
Okay. So I love meditation. Meditation is great. I've tried tapping, too. I also find that it works great. I don't know as much about tapping as about meditation, but what
tapping is recent.
Yeah, and I have a lot of friends that teach it, and but I find that a problem only comes when you're using these things as a way to get the emotion to calm down or go away. Like take meditation, for example. In the East, when you meditate, there's no goals. In fact, Zen Buddhism is all about Zazen, which is meditation. So my training, my background, like that whole world that I come from, all they do is meditate, meditate, meditate. And then they do voice dialogue too because of my teacher did it. But if my teacher didn't do voice dialogue, all they would do is have a little brief half an hour conversation and then they'd meditate for the rest of the day. Now, the thing about meditation in the East is there's no goals involved. And people say, oh, you don't get into Zen in order to feel less anxiety or improve your life. There's a saying in Zen, Zen is good for nothing. You know, it's kind of funny. There's no hope for a better future in Zen. There's no improvement of your life. That is a Western concept. It's not an Eastern concept. So meditation, having come from the East, there's no goal in it. But in the West here, goal-oriented meditation is a Western thing. You know, I had a client once that came to me, and he says, I have to meditate at least 16 times a day just to get through the day. And if I don't meditate at least 6 times a day, it used to be 4, but then it was 5, then it was 6, I also can't sleep at night. And there's a lot of people that can't make it through a day unless they meditate. And that is a Western thing. We've started to use meditation as a way to calm down or feel less anxiety or sleep better or on and on and on and on. And so we've introduced goals. Like tapping, like I said, I don't know much about it, but I know that people are using tapping as a way to calm down. and feel better. And so the few times that I did it, I'm like, oh, geez, this worries me that it's more repression. Now, in your question, though, I paid very careful attention to the language. You wrote, while tapping it, you're hoping that it will dissolve or get better. And when you meditate, you find that most of the time, the anxiety or the fear goes away quickly. So let me just pause here for a moment. Do you tap and meditate in order to quell your fear and anxiety? Do you have that goal?
No. Well, when I started meditating, I took a long course of Vipassana, so it's a 10-day course. It's very, very long. And at the beginning, I had a lot of resistance to do it because it was 10 days, and I found that crazy. But I remember that my teacher, who is also my friend, she asked me just to surrender to whatever it was, to the process. So I struggled with myself for 4 days. And then the 8th day, I thought to myself, I hated it, but I know somehow it's good for me. And I haven't stopped doing it. I do feel that it is not like if I sit and it will immediately take whatever out. It's not something like tapping that you do it because you're upset. It's just the practice itself with time has helped me. It just has opened up things. It for example, when I read your book, I see that with practice, it's easier for me to, like, what I've been doing, it's training the mind. It's like, it's a tool so you can train your mind to be more, step back a little bit with whatever happens. So I realize that when I feel emotions, it's easier for me to observe them instead of control them.
Right.
But it's been a process that has occurred naturally, and just because of the results that I see, it's something that I appreciate a lot to have in my life. But it's been a process. I remember asking, like, do you, you know, what do you experience? And tell me more so I can motivate myself. But it's just little gifts that I have found, and the reason I like doing that.
Well, I'll give you an experience to show you the difference between meditation and goal-oriented meditation. And again, a lot of people are meditating in order to calm down, and they're also meditating as a way to train their brain. Right. And like I said, that's a really Western thing. And I believe that tapping probably is really useful for taking people into their bodies. You know, just you tap on part of your body, you know, it's like, hey, I'm paying attention to this different reality now.
It's like deep presence.
Yeah, anything
tapping
that takes
is
out of our mind is wonderful. And meditation is wonderful because it gives you kind of a subject-object view of your mind. You know, you can have a bird's-eye view or a separate view, observing your mind, observing your thoughts like clouds passing. You know,
right,
that separation, right? Again, it's taking you out of your mind. So anything that takes us away from our reasoning, analytical mind and takes us into our bodies, both of those, big fans. But there's a big difference when you introduce goals to these processes. Let me just show you rather than tell you. So
you're breaking up a little bit, by the way.
Okay.
Your voice started to break up.
Okay. How about now? Can you hear me better now?
Breaking up a little bit.
Okay. Were you able to hear most of what I just said?
Yeah, you were saying that you will give me an example.
Right.
Instead of giving me an example, you were going to do something.
So let me facilitate this as a meditation. So this is not a voice. we're not going to do any voice dialogue.
You're breaking up again.
Oh, okay. Well, let's see. Let me just try something.
That's better.
How about now? That's better?
Yep.
All right.
Good.
Yeah.
We're going to do two extremely short meditations, and I want to show you the difference between the two. And this will be where we end our session.
Yep.
So the first thing that somebody learning to meditate does is they learn to count their breaths. It's a very basic meditation. So let's do five breaths. We're going to count our breaths to five. And do this meditation, you know, breathe in, breathe out five times with the goal to calm down and to train your brain. So let's everybody close our eyes and put your feet on the floor and get into a meditation stance and do five breaths in silence. Everybody's going to have their own experience. And you're going to count your breaths, like breathing in, one, out, breathing in, two, out, with the goal to calm down and train your brain. Ready? Go. Okay, bring it home. I feel better. You know, it's nice. And now, do it again. And just count your breaths. No goal. Just count your breaths from one to five. Do the same exercise and omit the goal. Okay, go. Okay, who wants to talk about the difference between those two experiences?
The first one, it's with a controller next to you, which always will just come up anyway. And the other one helps for the controller to step back a little bit and observe.
Right. And funnily enough, only a little bit, anybody else? Yeah, anybody else?
One was thinking and the other was just feeling.
Yeah. It's like with the goal, we're in our brains again. We're trying to train our brains. We're trying to use our brains to train our brains. Somebody else want to comment about that?
I think it's just the two of us.
Oh. We lost a lot of people. Look at the number. Oh. Nope, we still have a bunch of people on. Well, some people may still be muted. So they're very different experiences. You know, and when you meditate with a goal, you're going to have a very different experience, and it will wind up being another attempt to not feel your fear. You know, if you use tapping to get into your body, great. But if you're using tapping as a way to calm down, you know, if you have that goal, then it's still just another way to not deal with your fear in an honest way. So that's the reason why I put that in the book. Like, I'm a big fan of tapping. I'm a big fan of meditation, as long as there aren't goals to
with a good intention. Yeah, Vipassana, it's more like be present with whatever is, with no attachment and not, there's two things, attachment and not holding, like no hoping that it will be a great experience and feel light and peace, and also not avoiding, not feeling pleasant. So it's
yeah.
just at the end, be. Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful. And
so,
and I'm wondering.
That's why I love it.
yeah. And I'm wondering if at the end of a 9-day Vipassana retreat, if I asked you to identify the fear in your body, I suspect that you'd still find it somewhere. You know, because
right.
fear is just part of our lives.
Yes, and, yes, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? So with that, I put my hands together. I bow to you all. Thank you for engaging in consciousness practice with me today. Good job.
Thank you.
Okay. And
thank you so much.
Yeah, submit questions in advance so that they are sure to get answered, and I'll see you guys next week.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yep.
Good job.
See you next week. Thanks. Bye.
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 Bye-bye.